Welcome to the Fabric Conversation called Citizen. We're spending 2 weeks before the U.S. election considering together what it means to be a citizen. Citizenship comes with rights and responsibilities. It's an important conversation that's bigger than national identity. So thanks for joining us. Here's Greg Meyer.
This is Evan Kennedy talking with me this evening here as we sit outside by a nice little fire. Evan has collaborated with me on a couple of things for Fabric over the years.
Yeah.
I understand your birthday's in a couple days.
It is, yeah.
So how old are you gonna be?
I'm gonna be 18.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yep. 18, what does that mean?
It means I'm officially an adult. I can officially vote. I can officially smoke cigarettes.
You can join the military.
Yes.
So the reason I want to talk to you was that the second one, that the voting.
Yeah.
You registered to vote?
I applied for an absentee ballot, and I got it in the mail. But I'm likely just going to vote in person at one of the, probably the voting station, right? That's what my parents are planning on doing, too. They're planning on voting in person, so I thought, well, I'll probably just follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, so how do you feel about voting? What does that mean?
I mean, it kind of feels like a rite of passage. At the same time, it also kind of feels like it doesn't make a whole lot of an impact. People say it makes such a huge impact, but it doesn't feel that way just because it's like one vote and you're only one person. And how big of a difference can that make?
Evan had more to say about voting, and not only about his concerns. What I see in Evan and his message is how they represent why what we are talking about today is so critical. You see, the shape of the world is decided by those who show up. And being a citizen, which is what we're talking about, means to show up. And while that includes a lot more than just voting, it certainly does include voting. In less than 2 weeks, your vote for the elections of November 3rd, 2020 will have been cast and counted. And if you're like me, you are, what should I say, struggling. Anxiety in its many forms seems to be at an all-time high. And no matter where you are on the social political spectrum, the results of this election, presidential, congressional, state, local, the results of this election matter. I mean, they always matter, don't get me wrong, but people are feeling that their very own lives and what they believe in are on the line in numbers like we have never seen before. And it isn't only a matter of who will win, but how the country will react to the results. I don't have to be a great prophet to predict that November 4th will not be a great kumbaya moment for us as a nation. Regardless of which way the vote goes, both the popular vote and the Electoral College, of course, there is going to be a digging in of heels and a resolve to minimize the grip that the other party has in our government in the running of our nation. That makes me nervous, which is an understatement. It tells my soul that we are not healthy as a people. And while I don't think there is anything I can do that will change all that, by a week from Tuesday, I do believe there is something I can do that we can all do. What we need and what we can do is what last week and what this week is all about, being citizens. Citizens of the not yet realized aspirations of this nation. Being a citizen may feel like a relic of some outdated patriotic speeches, but in reality, it may be exactly what we are missing, individually and collectively, in order to get us where we need to be. Being a citizen offers a corrective to the individualistic forces that persistently pull us apart. It can slow the pendulum so that its swings are not so wide. It can make our wrestlings with one another more constructive. It can show us where and how we make a difference, and it might even help us respect and value each other when we vehemently disagree. We need a vision like that behind our showing up for each other in order to be a community, a city, a state, a nation, or just to share this planet that we live on with each other. Kerry Miller of Minnesota Public Radio did an interview several months ago with John Della Volpe, who is the director of polling for the Harvard Kennedy School's Institute of Politics, and with Stella Roos, who is the professor of government and politics from the University of Maryland. They were talking about the role of younger voters in 2020. During the interview, many young voters, ages 18 to 35, called in confirming what they had observed and what they were saying. And that is that these new members of society have never experienced a government that wasn't gridlocked and hyperpolarized. While the majority believed in our form of government and were, in fact, interested in a stronger, more robust government to solve our problems, they were disillusioned with how it is happening. Only 8% thought government was working, and most thought that when it was working, It was only for corporations and the wealthy, not them. The fears that they expressed living with aren't ones that come from outside our borders, like terrorism. There were things like climate change, student debt, access to housing, hate groups, and certainly the pandemic that we're in right now. Things they expressed that had to do with us, that we could be doing something about. These younger voters don't need to be scolded and told to get out and vote. They need to see why it matters. They're rolling up their sleeves already, committing to careers that they believe make a difference in impressive numbers. It's up to all of us to not just recognize, but empathize with their very real situation. The same goes for people with black and brown bodies, indigenous peoples, immigrants, and our LGBTQ neighbors, people for whom America does not feel like it was built for them. They need to see actual examples of democracy working, of citizenship taken seriously. So even though Evan is determined to vote anyway, he, like each of us, needs a reason to show up and to vote, to think it matters. A reason to believe that what we see now isn't the only way things can be. We don't need illusions that everything can be solved at the ballot box, but an actual experience of seeing the ballot box as both a product and a tool of a larger picture of who we are and what we do. That is what citizens can do. That is going to ask a lot of us as well. But you're amazing people. And amazing people do amazing things. And being a citizen doesn't ask you or anyone to perform some heroic task. It simply asks you to see yourself in relationship with all those others, not against them. Last week, I offered a definition of citizen from the work of civic evangelist, author, and CEO of Seattle's Citizen University, Eric Liu, that sums up what this relationship is all about. Being a citizen, he said, is to be bound to others in mutual aid and obligation. Being a citizen is to be bound to others in mutual aid and obligation. When we're bound to one another that way, I rely on you and you rely on me. You aren't alone in your fear because it is my fear too, and together we can't leave it unaddressed. Being bound this way isn't a requirement that patriotism puts on our shoulders. It is a recognition of the reality of our situation. It is seeing that the social fabric is woven from the threads of every individual, and there's no other way that it can happen. And when that is frayed, when it is unraveling, it is weaker for everybody. It also realizes that the picture that the fabric displays is more than what any one individual or group in society can give to it. Who we are, what we do and accomplish is an amalgam of what we all contribute, a design that uses us all together in a way that is greater than any one of us. It's only a hop, skip, and a jump from there to see how this is a deeply spiritual enterprise. When we don't see that weaving happening, when we feel uncared for, it's easy to let go, to believe that what we do doesn't matter. Forget voting, forget paying attention, forget trying to make my voice be heard. Well, last week, we heard pieces from a TED Talk by Eric Liu. Today, I'd like us to listen to parts of another one of his. This one is called There's No Such Thing as Not Voting. There's a link to this TED Talk on the description of our podcast and on the episode page of our website, fabricmpls.com/citizen2.
When we vote, even if it is in anger, we are part of a collective creative leap of faith. Voting helps us generate the very power that we wish we had.
Voting is a self-fulfilling act of belief. And you know, not voting is also a self-fulfilling act of belief. The difference is in what you believe. I want to challenge you to believe great things are possible, even though they don't always happen. That what is wrong right now, what feels broken or dysfunctional, isn't the way things have to be, but the way we've let them slide. And I am asking you to believe that being citizens can make the difference. After all, it's easy to believe that voting doesn't matter if by that you mean your candidate lost. But let's stop and think about that conclusion for a moment, because it sounds like wanting your one vote to be the decider, and if it's not, it doesn't count. I mean, you feel invalidated if you don't get the result you wanted, that you voted for. Well, guess what? 100 million or so others feel the same way. Why should you, not they, have the say? Likewise, why should they, not you, have the say? I understand the desire to have my voice be felt and responded to. I want that too. But there's something contrary to being a citizen when I insist that my vote must cause the outcome I want. That doesn't sound like someone who is bound to others in mutual aid and obligation. It sounds like someone who is bound to have their own way. It sounds like this is a problem in a lot more places in our society than just voting, by the way. See, voting isn't intended to give you what you want, but to give us what we want. And that us and we are really big us's and we's. The more we all buy into mutual aid and obligation, the less our voting will feel like a win or a loss, and the more it will feel like the way we move together forward. So what do citizens do? Well, here's one thing. Citizens live with the tension of being an individual who exists in community. They constantly live with this crazy difference between the personal and the collective, their preferences, convictions, and even deep core values, and the common good. Even when it drives them crazy, they hold on to both sides and sacrifice neither. You see, it isn't a trade-off or a one or the other deal. It is a dynamic process you and I live with as citizens, exerting, being noisy, arguing for, even protesting about what we believe in, while simultaneously recognizing that what I think is best may not be the best. My good is not synonymous with the common good. And a citizen's choice to live with that tension points at the next thing a citizen can do. And if you think this last one asks a lot of you, wait till you hear this one. Citizens respect their opponents. I didn't say respect their ideas or actions. I mean, sometimes you will and sometimes you won't. But respect the people behind them. All ideas are not of equal value, but all people are. The truth is that we don't all have to like each other to be citizens together. I suppose in theory, of course, that there are people who don't like me. I can't imagine why, but you know, in theory, it's possible. The truth is, it's inevitable. As a population, we are really different from each other. And that is a problem because it makes it really hard to work with each other, but it also holds strengths. I got a lesson in how valuing a person when I couldn't value their behavior could happen long ago when I supervised a team that worked with kids from birth through high school. Rob Norris Weber led the middle and high school program, and I worked alongside him as best I could. There were a lot of kids, and as you might imagine, that included some who I felt were more trouble than they were worth. When a kid was acting out, disrupting the group, it was tempting to haul them off to straighten them out, or better yet, tempting to just wish they would go away. I was wondering what to do with these kids, and Rob taught me to ask a different question, a question that often cleared up the behavior problems, at least within the group. The question was this: how are things at home? You see, we didn't have bad kids. We had kids who were dealing with real stuff, big stuff. So often their behavior was an unconscious cry for help, a spilling over of emotional energy and pain. We seldom were able to fix their problems, but we could be a place where they found the strength and resilience they needed to go live in it again. And after all, what were we there for? To make sure our evening program went well, or to help these young people turn into the amazing people that they could become? What is our job as citizens? To create a beaver cleaver world, or to be engaged in bonds of mutual aid and obligation? Now, don't take this to mean that you've got it all together, and the reason your social or political opponents don't see things your way is that their parents fought or had drinking problems. No, it means that everybody's ideas and actions come from somewhere. Yours do too. We are all the products of our choices, sure. We are also the products of our experiences. Life is complicated. Hurts find a way of coming out. Experiences find expressions in us. That stuff needs to be listened to. It has a lot to teach us if we listen to it, in ourselves and in each other. That reminds me of something I read on Nextdoor a couple weeks ago. I'm wondering how this person's very likely factually accurate account is missing this aspect of being a fellow citizen and what it reveals about the self-fulfilling beliefs that they have about the world and the people in it that they see as a problem. Let me read it to you. Crime alert. Folks, beware of small groups, 3 to 4 young teenage girls and possibly boys too, who will attempt to get in the way of your car at an intersection while you're stopped and try to ask directions, ask for help, or get you to roll down your window. They may try to assault or rob you. This happened today to my girlfriend. There were three teenage girls dressed in dark winter coats and wearing masks who tried to fake that my girlfriend hit them. Then they kicked her car and yelled obscenities. This was in broad daylight between 12:30 and 1 at the intersection of 55th and 10th. I was close enough that my girlfriend called me in distress. I saw the young girls, chased them, and called 911 to give locations and descriptions. Luckily, when the police arrived, they had caught one, and both my girlfriend and I identified her. They even matched a dusty footprint on my girlfriend's car with the shoes of the teenage perpetrator. Note, this next section is in all caps. Do not stop for any young girls or boys or anyone asking for directions, and don't roll down your windows. The officer who came said these groups are, quote unquote, moving south. By the way, if you're not from Minneapolis, that's code for better and more white neighborhoods. These groups are moving south and they are brazen. Not sure if they had weapons, but they did not seem to care about anything but trouble. I need to pause after reading that and just check in with myself. What does that make me feel? How am I reacting emotionally, physically? And part of the challenge is that the citizen thing isn't just an intellectual decision to be made. It is a visceral, real life, real time experience. Now, I want to honor the writer's fear and clearly traumatic experience. What happened to them shouldn't be happening. And I don't want to excuse the behavior of the girls who did this by just saying, well, they've got tough lives. You know, I am worried at where this message left us, however. I'm also worried about what the experience left the girls with. You see, respecting our opponents, seeing the humanity in people that we are in conflict with, means listening to one another. It means engagement with each other. It means empathy for each other. It means bonds of mutual aid and obligation, and that won't happen overnight. So how do citizens do that? How do I practice this honoring of others that we are so vehemently opposed to? How do we manage the tension of what we believe to be right personally and what happens to us all collectively? Well, and you're not going to like this either, but it is by managing our expectations. Okay, now before you click stop on this podcast, hear me out. I'm not talking about toning down what you expect this world to be like, but what it means to be there. You see, another illusion that we harbor is that democracy, this self-governing together, is something that we can arrive at. It can be a state, an equilibrium of various forces that once established will balance itself and just keep going like that. Nope. That might work in a chemical reaction, but with people, sorry, we're too complex for that. Who we are keeps changing. New babies keep getting born and they grow up and they've got to figure it all out themselves. Times change, technology changes, new issues emerge. The global physical, economic, political, cultural context keeps shifting. You see, democracy is not a state. It's a Jenga tower with pieces being pulled out and placed on top, ready to topple over every day. It never quite works. But we can either be building it or watching it crumble. Democracy is not utopia, nor a mountain that is tough to climb, but sooner or later you're going to get to the top. It is a mountain range, and then a desert, and then an ocean, and then a tropical rainforest, and then repeat again for one's whole life long. And that challenge is more than struggle. It is also full of beauty, accomplishment, discovery, wonder, and most of all, we do it together. Now you may think that's too hard. Yeah, it's hard, but it is not too hard. What is too hard is living in a world where everyone looks after themselves, in which the preferences of the most powerful prevail. That would not be democracy. That would not be the United States. And that is not, by the way, the kingdom of heaven. When Jesus talked about that kingdom of heaven, he wasn't talking about some otherworldly place you go and you die, but where we are right now, when we see and pursue God's vision for our lives and our world. In fabric language, it is our present world with all three strands of self, others, and that which is bigger and beyond us, well woven together. To not be working on putting the world together, hear me on this. To not be working on putting the world together or to believe it isn't worthwhile or that we are better off doing it without everyone is to be letting it fall apart. It is to be giving it over to those who don't share this vision of being bound to one another in mutual aid and obligation. I like how Eric Liu puts this.
Why bother voting? Because there is no such thing as not voting. Not voting is voting for everything that you may detest and oppose. Not voting can be dressed up as an act of principled passive resistance. But in fact, not voting is actively handing power over to those whose interests are counter to your own, and those who would be very glad to take advantage of your absence. Not voting is for suckers.
Okay, that's blunt. But in what I hear him saying to me, he's right on, because I understand that the power of my vote can't all rest on November 3rd. Like I said before, it is both the product and a tool of the vision I have for our nation. I exercise my ability through my acts of citizenship, which are done every day and mostly locally, to create a context in which an election actually makes sense. It actually reflects what I and the people around me are striving for, even though we aren't all on the same page. And I do it to encourage the electorate, my fellow citizens, to share that vision from their perspectives faithfully. And when I am doing that, my vote is a product of my citizenship. And I don't vote and then wait to see what happens, but I continue to stay engaged. I show up. I work to make the decision we made together work for all of us and to be shaped by my voice as well as that of others. That is how my vote is a tool of my citizenship. Citizenship isn't something you exercise for 5 minutes once every 4 years, maybe every 2 years, even 1 year if you're really hardcore. Being a citizen is a bond of mutual aid and obligation that is with you every day, everywhere you go. Talking with Evan Kennedy and other youth from Fabric did me good. Among all the ideas and worries that they have, there is a sense of hope and possibility, which I think is different from and more powerful than optimism. Let's hear a bit more from Evan.
So why vote then?
Yeah, that's a good point. Said, that it feels like it's not much of an impact, but it does make an impact, and your voice does count. I believe we have something like 60% of people voted last year. Still means at least 40% did not vote last election. If 100% made the choices, or made their call, and put their opinions forward, America could really look drastically different. There's so many people that don't do it, and their voice does matter.
This guy's on to something. Let's all believe it like he does, not despite what we see around us, but because of what we know is possible. Eric Liu would be thrilled to hear what Evan Kennedy had to say, by the way. He unpacks this possibility even further and how all of us being citizens can shape the world. Listen to another portion of his TED Talk, which was recorded just before the 2016 election, but is still perfectly spot on.
We live in a time right now, divided, often very dark, where across the left and the right, there's a lot of talk of revolution and the need for revolution to disrupt everyday democracy. Well, here's the thing. Everyday democracy already gives us a playbook for revolution. In the 2012 presidential election, young voters, Latino voters, Asian American voters, low-income voters all showed up at less than 50%. In the 2014 midterm elections, turnout was 36%. Which was a 70-year low. And in your average local election, turnout hovers somewhere around 20%. I invite you to imagine 100%. Picture 100%. Mobilize 100%, and overnight, we get revolution. Overnight, the policy priorities of this country change dramatically, and every level of government becomes radically more responsive to all the people. What would it take to mobilize 100%? Well, we do have to push back against efforts afoot all across the country right now to make voting harder. But at the same time, we have to actively create a positive culture of voting that people want to belong to, be part of, and experience together. We have to make purpose. We have to make joy. So yes, let's have that revolution, a revolution of spirit, of ideas, of policy and participation, a revolution against cynicism, a revolution against this self-fulfilling sense of powerlessness. Let's vote this revolution into existence. And while we're at it, let's have some fun.
I invite you to imagine 100% too. Anyone who doesn't want 100% to vote doesn't believe in democracy. Anyone who doesn't seek to inform and educate 100% is not furthering democracy. I invite you, like last week, to believe this. Not because it is some dream we would all like to have happen, but because it is a real thing that we have seen happen. The United States has done great things. It has moved from a core that embraced its bonds of mutual aid and obligation before, and it can do it again. And it is still, in fact, doing that in many places and in many ways. And it's never perfect, of course, far from it. Our nation has had a blind eye, even a punishing hand towards people and problems that it professed to embrace. But democracy is not a promise of being there, but of having the mechanisms and the vision available to us so that we can pull ourselves back on track, swing the pendulum towards the center of common good. So I invite you to imagine 100%. And that means I am also inviting you to vote and to invite others to vote. Help them figure out how. If you aren't sure yourself, there's a link on this podcast description that can help you know how to be registered, how to vote, and how to help get the vote out. You can also find that on our website, fabricmpls.com/vote. So make your voice be heard. But don't just be a citizen for the election. Work those bonds of mutual aid and obligation where and when you can, especially places and times you never thought of doing it before.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.